Today is Tuesday, July the 1st, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Dollar fall, an expression of the crisis of US and global capitalism. Nick Beams, June the 30th, 2025. The US dollar has had its worst start for the year since 1973, in the wake of President Nixon's August 1971 decision to remove its gold backing and abrogate the Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944, which had been a central plank of the post-war monetary order established after the chaos of the 1930s. In the first 6 months of the year, it has fallen by more than 10% against a basket of six major currencies, in a sign of a loss of confidence in its status as the dominant currency and a safe haven in periods of financial turbulence and stress. The dollar had been under downward pressure from the beginning of the year, with a turning point in its slide coming after April the 2nd, when Trump announced the imposition of massive reciprocal tariffs on a range of countries. The upending of the post-war international trading system, signified by this decision, set off financial turbulence, with a significant fall in the US bond market, sending yields, i.e. interest rates, higher. But instead of there being a move into the dollar, considered to be the, quote, normal response, there was a dollar sell-off, sending its value in currency markets down, as the prevailing theme was, quote, sell America. This downward movement has continued despite Trump's decision on April the 9th for a 90-day pause in initiating the tariff hikes to allow negotiations to take place. Trump was responding to a sell-off in the bond markets, which he said had started to get a little yippy. In the near three-month period since then, no agreements have been announced, except for a deal with the UK. And nervousness is returning with the July 9 deadline for the end of the pause approaching. The concern is not only on the blanket reciprocal tariffs, but involves other measures announced by Trump, in particular the tariff hikes on autos, which are directed against Japan and Germany. Japan has been engaged in a series of discussions with the Trump administration over the tariff hikes, which threaten to cost its car industry tens of billions of dollars, but no agreement has been reached. In comments to the Financial Times on the dollar's slide after it dropped by a further 0.5% yesterday, a foreign exchange strategist at the financial firm ING, Francesco Pezzole, pointed to some of the reasons. Quote, "The dollar has become the whipping boy of Trump 2.0's erratic policies," he said, citing the tariff war, the growth of US debt, and the continued attacks on the independence of the US Federal Reserve. Trump has labelled Fed Chair Jerome Powell as a, quote, numbskull and a moron for his refusal to cut interest rates in line with his demand that the Fed rate be reduced to as low as 1 or 2% from its present level of 4.5%. The turbulence resulting from Trump's agenda and the increase in the debt flowing from his tax-cutting budget, which could see as much as a further $3.2 trillion, added to the US debt mountain of $36 trillion, were cited in comments by economists in a poll conducted by the FT. In its report on the poll, it said that Trump's, quote, breathtaking fiscal policy excess, together with, quote, attacks on the Federal Reserve's independence, risk diminishing the US's status as the ultimate safe haven for foreign investors, end of quote. A comment by Saraj Bhattarai of the University of Texas at Austin summed up the prevailing sentiment. Quote, "The safe haven assets appear to be the Swiss franc and gold. In fact, the US looks like an emerging market, whereby policy uncertainty leads to rising risk premia that drive long-term yields up and the currency value down," end of quote. Citing what took place after April the 2nd, dubbed by Trump as, quote, Liberation Day, Evie Papa, an economist at a major Madrid university, said, quote, "US Treasury bonds might not be a safe asset anymore," end of quote. Lack of confidence in the US dollar is driving the price of gold to new highs. It has risen by around 25% this year and at one point hit $3,500 per ounce, 100 times its price of $35 when Nixon removed the gold backing from the US dollar. One of the drivers of the rise is increased buying by central banks. The Taxpayers Association of Europe, TAE, has even sent letters to the finance ministries and central banks of Italy and Germany, urging that their gold held in the Fed's gold vault in Manhattan be moved out. TAE President Michael Yeager told the FT, quote, "We are very concerned about Trump's tampering with the Federal Reserve Bank's independence," end of quote. Those fears are not misplaced when it is recalled that the removal of the gold backing from the US dollar in 1971 was simply announced on Sunday night television without any discussion with other powers. As the dollar slide continues amid mounting debt, there is a real prospect that the Trump administration could act unilaterally at any stage. One idea circulating in the economic circles of the Trump regime is that US Treasury bonds could be turned into perpetual bonds. That is, while they would continue to pay interest, the principal would never be repaid, an action that would be regarded as a default by the US on its debt. This was rejected by Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent back in April, but the fact that he had to squash it, at least for the present, is an indication of the kind of measures being discussed as the debt crisis deepens. While the actions of the Trump administration are the proximate cause of the dollar decline, they are themselves the outcome of the historic crisis of US imperialism, rooted in its long-term economic decline. When global capitalism was restabilized after the war, not least by the Bretton Woods Agreement, it was the industrial powerhouse of the world. It used that power to establish economic order after the chaos of the 1930s. This was not a product of the benevolence of the US. It was based on the recognition that unless it were done, then the world and the US would return to the conditions of the Depression, bringing with it the prospect of social revolution. But the revival of the world economy steadily undermined the dominant position of the US in world trade, leading to a balance of payments and trade deficits, which meant it could no longer redeem dollars for gold. Following the Nixon decision, the dollar retained its position as the global currency, but it did so on new foundations. It was a fiat currency, no longer backed by value in the form of gold, but by the power of the US state and its financial markets. However, the rise of finance, which this entailed, set in motion processes that have led to the present crisis. Over the past 50 years, the US has become the center of financial parasitism and speculation, resulting in a series of financial storms: the October 1987 stock market crash, the collapse of the dot-com bubble in 2001, the crash of 2008, and the Treasury market freeze of March 2020, to name some of the more prominent. Throughout this period, there has been an escalation of government debt, not least because of the increase in military spending and massive corporate bailouts. This is reflected in the growth of the Treasury market, where government debt is bought and sold from around $5 trillion in 2008 to $29 trillion today. The rise of parasitism and speculation as the chief driver of profit accumulation, leading to the rise of an oligarchy based on finance capital, is indicated by the fact that just 15% of financial market transactions are involved in the development of new investments, with 85% based on dealings in financial assets. But finance capital cannot continue to endlessly accumulate, seemingly creating profit out of thin air through debt. All financial assets, shares, debt, and the various other arcane mechanisms are in the final analysis a claim on the surplus value extracted from the working class. Consequently, there is no peaceful solution to the mounting crisis within the framework of the capitalist order. For the US, this means the intensification of war on the economic and military front, as it seeks to batter down its rivals, foes like China, as well as erstwhile allies in Europe, coupled with a war against the working class at home, enforced by a dictatorial regime. Nor is there the prospect of a so-called multipolar world where currencies coexist and peacefully compete, as is being advanced by China and increasingly by Europe. That road is a return to the economic conflicts of the 1930s, which led to World War II. This is why, in the midst of deepening economic turmoil, governments around the world are arming and rearming. The dollar debt crisis is rooted not simply in the personality and actions of Trump. He is only the most malignant expression of the historic bankruptcy of the capitalist system as a whole. It places before the working class the necessity to end this system of war, economic crisis, deprivation, fascistic and authoritarian regimes, in the political struggle for international socialism and the building of the World Party of Socialist Revolution, the International Committee of the Fourth International to lead it. Trump administration revokes US visas for Bob Vylan over anti-genocide chants at Glastonbury. Jacob Cross, the 30th of June, 2025. Over the weekend, the Glastonbury Music Festival in England revealed the powerful and growing artistic and mass opposition to the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Millions are outraged about the 20-month ethnic cleansing and starvation campaign carried out by the Israeli government with the full support of the United States and all the imperialist powers. The best efforts of the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, to censor resistance to this historic war crime by refusing to broadcast the performance of Irish-based rap group Kneecap failed miserably. Numerous artists at the concert spoke out in defence of the Palestinians' right to exist and condemned the Israeli government, and a veritable sea of Palestinian flags was visible to any BBC viewer. One of the more powerful performances Saturday came from the British punk duo Bob Vylan. The band is unabashedly left-wing, with many songs focusing on inequality, joblessness, police repression and anti-imperialism. During his set, frontman Bobby Vylan led the crowd in chants of, quote, "Free, free Palestine," and "Death, death to the IDF." The slogans were raised the day after Haaretz published a damning expose based on interviews with Israeli soldiers stationed near so-called humanitarian zones in Gaza. These distribution points, coordinated by the US and Israeli governments, are in fact daily killing fields. Soldiers admitted that they were ordered to fire live rounds into crowds of starving civilians to, quote, disperse them. One Israeli soldier told Haaretz, quote, "I feel like a Nazi. It looked exactly like we were actually the Nazis and they were the Jews," end of quote. Violence performance and calls for the defeat of the IDF were met with overwhelming support from the festival crowd and quickly went viral online. On Instagram, Bob Vylan's followers have more than doubled in less than 24 hours. But the predictable backlash from the political establishment and Zionist organizations was immediate and vicious. As Vylan's performance went viral online, the Zionist doxing group Stop Anti-Semitism demanded on X that the Trump administration ban Bob Vylan from entering the U.S., Recently elected Florida Republican Representative Randy Fine, a fanatical supporter of the Israeli war crimes, responded to the post, quote, "On it." Last year, Fine responded to the murder of 26-year-old Turkish-American citizen Aznur Ezici by the IDF in the West Bank with more calls for murder, quote, "Throw rocks, get shot. One less Muslim terrorist. Fire away," end of quote. Leo Tyrrell, the chair of Trump's Department of Justice, quote, "Task Force on Combating Anti-Semitism," amplified Stop Anti-Semitism's post with the reply, "Noted," and tagged Donald Trump and Secretary of State Marco Rubio. In an interview with Jewish Insider published over the weekend, Tyrrell declared, "We understand that Mr. Vylan is planning to travel to the United States as part of the Inertia Tour. In response, Mr. Terrell's task force will be reaching out to the U.S. Department of State on Monday to determine what measures are available to prevent the promotion of violent anti-Semitic rhetoric in the United States," end of quote. On Monday, Deputy Secretary of State Christopher Landau announced that the State Department had revoked the group's visas. In a post on X, Landau wrote, quote, "The at State Department has revoked the U.S. visas for the members of the Bob Vylan Band in light of their hateful tirade in Glastonbury, including leading the crowd in death chants. Foreigners who glorify violence and hatred are not welcome visitors to our country. The banning of Bob Vylan is an attack on the democratic rights of the entire working class and youth. The government and ruling elite are terrified of the growing global opposition to genocide, repression and war. The chants that rang out at Glastonbury expressed the sentiments of millions. Adding to the censorship campaign, Bob Vylan was reportedly dropped by their talent agency shortly after the visa revocation. The campaign to label any opposition to the Israeli onslaught as, quote, anti-Semitism, is an ideological weapon of war. It is not being used to protect Jews, but to suppress mass opposition to imperialist war crimes. Would it have been, quote, anti-German to call for the defeat of the SS in 1944? Or to wish for the destruction of the Weimark as it laid siege to Stalingrad? Bob Vylan, who has never killed anyone and is not accused of any crime, is barred from entering the United States. Meanwhile, it was reported by multiple outlets on Monday that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a man named in a warrant by the International Criminal Court for Genocide, is scheduled to be received in Washington next Monday with full honors by aspiring dictator Trump and the US political establishment. In the America of 2025, chanting against the genocidal army gets you banished. Carrying out genocide on behalf of the US government gets you the red carpet. Netanyahu, unlike Bob Vylan, does not merely chant slogans. He is the head of a state that has translated genocidal ideology into genocidal action. He has referred to Palestinians as, quote, the children of darkness, and invoked the biblical command to destroy Amalek, stating, Israel must remember what Amalek did and not forget, end of quote. These are not metaphorical flourishes. They are political directives backed by the machinery of state power. The bombing of hospitals and refugee camps, the destruction of water and sanitation infrastructure, the starvation of children. Bob Vylan's banning is not an isolated incident, but part of an ongoing crackdown. As WSWS previously documented, a growing number of artists, musicians, scientists and others have faced threats, harassment, detention, or outright bans from entering the US under Trump's fascist border regime. In a powerful statement opposing Vylan's visa revocation and the noxious, quote, anti-Semitism slander, the Jewish punk artist Grandson, whose upcoming US tour features Bob Vylan, wrote, quote, censorship of art is a tactic of control. They blame artists and activists and not those responsible for the conditions we rage against. As a Jewish artist, I am deeply offended by the conflation of criticism against a military force known for their indiscriminate violence with anti-Semitism. The Israeli government has done more to exacerbate anti-Semitism this past 2 years than any statements by artists advocating for Palestinian freedom and solidarity. In another statement, UK group Lambrini Girls explained, all good for bands to be political as long as it's digestible and commodifiable. When it's actually needed and warranted and pushing against the true status quo, then time after time again, historically it's proven that mass media and the government will villainize artists. It's why oppressive regimes often target artists, musicians and writers first. The decision to ban Bob Vylan does not reflect the power or confidence of the American government or the other imperialist regimes backing genocide. On the contrary, it reveals their profound political weakness and fear. These governments understand that the official narrative cannot withstand scrutiny. They are terrified that any genuine expression of opposition would become the spark that ignites a mass anti-war, anti-capitalist and socialist movement. The conflation of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, a lie pushed by both the Biden and Trump administrations, is being used to criminalize opposition to imperialist policy. Meanwhile, the real anti-Semites and fascists who now dominate the Republican Party and sections of the state are welcomed into power. Mamdani responds to right-wing attacks with accommodations to the Democratic Party and big business. John Conrad, June 30, 2025. In the week after his victory in the Democratic primary for New York City mayor, Zoran Mamdani has become the target of a ferocious campaign of threats and denunciations led by the fascist Republican Party and fueled by the corporate media and Democratic officials. At the center of the campaign is Trump, who has repeatedly denounced Mamdani, a Democratic Socialist of American member, in fascistic terms. On Fox News Sunday, Trump warned that if Mamdani became mayor, quote, he's going to have to do the right thing or they're not getting any money, end of quote. At a press event Friday, he again attacked, quote, this communist from New York, declaring, that's a terrible thing for our country, end of quote. Other Republican lawmakers, including Representative Andy Ogles of Tennessee, have called for Mamdani to be denaturalized and deported, and Trump's fascistic border czar has threatened to increase mass detentions of immigrants. The Democratic Party leadership, which backed Andrew Cuomo in the primaries, has done nothing to oppose the vicious threats from the far right, with some even joining in attacking Mamdani. Most prominently, Democratic New York Senator Kristen Gillibrand falsely claimed that Mamdani supported, quote, global jihad and is an anti-Semite because of his past comments in opposition to Israel's genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. During a press briefing Friday, when asked by a reporter to respond to Republican calls for Mamdani's deportation, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer simply stated, quote, that's disgusting, before quickly turning to the next question. While some leading Democrats have endorsed Mamdani for the general election, both Schumer and the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries have withheld support. Cuomo has signaled he will stay on the ballot as an independent alongside current Mayor Eric Adams. Billionaire Bill Ackman, former Democratic donor turned Trump supporter who bankrolled Cuomo's primary campaign, has pledged to, quote, take care of the fundraising for a centrist alternative to Mamdani. What the ruling class and its political representatives fear is not Mamdani's minor reform proposals, but the popular sentiments behind the vote and expectations that will accompany his elevation to mayor of the city that is the home of Wall Street. Mamdani appealed to enormous hostility to social inequality, as well as opposition to the genocide in Gaza and the Trump administration's assault on immigrants and moves to establish a presidential dictatorship. Mamdani has himself responded by shifting rapidly to the right, seeking to reassure the Democratic Party establishment and sections of the corporate and financial oligarchy that his mayoral campaign represents no serious threat to capitalist interests. In relation to his economic proposals, Mamdani has stressed the establishment character of his main priorities, including freezing rents, which was done during the previous administration of Bill de Blasio, and creating a pilot program of 5 city-run grocery stores, one in each of the boroughs of New York City. In an interview with Kristen Welker on NBC News Meet the Press on Sunday, Mamdani was asked how he would pay for economic reforms, particularly under conditions in which New York's Democratic Party governor, Kathy Hochul, has vowed that she will not support any tax increases. In response, Mamdani stressed that he wanted to just tax those making more than $1 million a year by 2% additional, and to bring corporate tax rates to the same level as in New Jersey. In relation to Hochul, he said that his aim was not to, quote, twist arms, but rather build partnership, and I'm looking forward to having that with the governor, he said. Mamdani was also asked to respond to statements from John Castimentidis, the billionaire owner of Gristedi's grocery chains, that, quote, if the city of New York is going socialist, he will shut down his stores and move the franchise. Mamdani replied that his, quote, vision for this city is for every single New Yorker, including business leaders, arguing that even the proposals like raising the top corporate tax rate to match New Jersey's would benefit them by addressing the cost of living crisis that, quote, prevents them from attracting and retaining the talent they need to grow their business, end of quote. On meeting these, quote, business leaders, Mamdani continued, quote, ultimately, I am looking forward to having those meetings, having those sit-downs to make clear why my vision will benefit all, end of quote. When asked, do you think that billionaires have a right to exist, Mendame responded, "I don't think that we should have billionaires because, frankly, it is so much money in a moment of such inequality. Ultimately, what we need is more equality across our city, across our state and across our country. And I look forward to working with everyone, including billionaires, to make a city that is fairer for all of them." End of quote. If it is the case that billionaires should not exist because of the levels of inequality, how is this to be squared with Mendame's proposal to, quote, work with the billionaires in addressing that crisis and implementing politics that will benefit everyone? Revealed in these comments is a basic contradiction of Mendame's perspective. While appealing to the mass social anger that propelled his election victory, Mamdani claims that the issues that drove his support can be resolved through the Democratic Party, which is a party of Wall Street and the ruling class, and without challenging the foundations of capitalist rule. The interview followed reports that Mamdani is actively seeking meetings with corporate financial leaders. Kathy Wild, head of the, quote, Partnership for New York City, a coalition of over 300 companies, said Mamdani called to request a meeting with the group's members to discuss his policies. A spokesperson stated, quote, "As Zoran has said throughout his campaign, he will meet with anyone and everyone to move our city forward," end of quote. As part of his effort to consolidate support among sections of business and the political leadership of the Democratic Party, Mamdani has also, quote, amped down his opposition to Israel's genocide in Gaza. In the Meet the Press interview, Mamdani was pressed by Welker to condemn the phrase, quote, "globalize the intifada," which he did not. In responding, however, Mamdani accepted the fiction of a, quote, "moment of anti-Semitism in our country and in our city," end of quote. He made no reference to the ongoing genocide in Gaza, which was the central issue in the broad popular support for his campaign. Mamdani then revealed the central issue of his campaign. What would it take to bring them, workers and youth, in New York City back to the Democratic Party? He answered his own question, a relentless focus on an economic agenda, end of quote. The aim of strengthening the Democratic Party, a party of the ruling class in war, is incompatible with advancing the interests of the working class and realizing the aims of the hundreds of thousands who voted for Mamdani. Opposition to inequality, war, and dictatorship cannot be waged through the Democratic Party and the institutions of the state. This is evident in both the ferocious reaction of the ruling class to Mamdani's victory and also in Mamdani's rapid political shifts in response to these attacks. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.